Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Leila Hilal, who is co-director of the New America Foundation Middle East Task Force. Previously, she served as a legal advisor to the Palestinian Negotiations Department and advised the Palestinian Constitutional Committee during the drafting of the Basic Law. She acted as an external advisor to the Palestinian negotiating team as part of the Annapolis Bilateral Peace Talks of 2008 and was senior policy advisor to the Commissioner General of the UN Palestinian Refugee Agency and a visiting fellow and instructor at the Refugee Studies Center at Oxford University. Welcome to Background Briefing, Leila Hilal.
Thank you for having me.
And today's vote in Paris for the Palestinian state to be accepted into UNESCO obviously is a step towards the broader acknowledgement of Palestinian statehood. Of course, it faces a more serious hurdle next month when the UN Security Council will decide whether to admit Palestine as a full member state. But it seems to be essentially being greeted with a lot of euphoria. So explain to us whether or not you think this is a premature celebration, given the big hurdle that's yet to come.
Well, as some people probably are already aware of, those who followed this debate, the primary obstacle to recognition of the Palestinian state in the UN has been the U.S. opposition to the bid, and that opposition has been hotly debated and is a point of contention. Now, with this recent vote in UNESCO, it puts the U.S. in, it backs the U.S. into even more of a tighter corner in terms of justifying its position against recognizing a Palestinian state. Now, the Security Council is composed of 15 members, 8 of which voted to recognize or admit Palestine as a full member state in UNESCO. So as it stands, the Palestinians have support from 8 countries of the Security Council for their bid. And so, again, it places greater pressure on those states, specifically the U.S., who would oppose the bid. Now, if I can just add one additional point, and that is in terms of explaining the euphoria, that is that you had the emerging economies of Brazil, India, South Africa, as well as China and Russia supporting and voting yes for admission of the Palestinians into UNESCO as a full member state. So these are important countries that wield increasing influence in the world. So that is also a point of excitement for those who would support the Palestinian application for statehood.
And, Leila Hilal, whether that would translate into aid for a new Palestinian state, it's certainly reason for optimism on the part of the Palestinians. But on the other side of the ledger, of course, the United States State Department spokesperson said that as a result of this vote, the United States would not make the $60 million payment due next month and cut funds to UNESCO, which, of course, the U.S. did back in 1984 as well.
Right. Well, the U.S. Didn't create a new policy in terms of deciding to cut funding to UNESCO today. There is a pre-existing legal provision on the books which precludes the U.S. from providing any money to a U.N. agency that grants full membership to an entity that does not have the international attributes of sovereignty. Now, this measure, the 1990 measure, was put in place in order to precisely prevent any preemptive steps by the international community to normalize relations with Palestine. So that provision kicked in today, but the U.S. has threatened, the U.S. Congress has threatened to take it further and pass laws to prevent any support to any country that has that had voted yes to recognize the Palestinian state and admit it for full membership, and has also called in general for ending aid to the UN as an entire body, in order to pressure and emphasize their opposition to this move.
Again, I'm speaking with Leila Hillal, who's the co-director of the New America Foundation Middle East Task Force. Previously, she served as a legal advisor to the Palestinian Negotiation Department and acted as an external advisor to the Palestinian negotiating team as part of the Annapolis bilateral peace talks of 2008. So just in terms of how this is playing out in the Palestinian, given that it's a divided state, apparently, this acceptance of the Palestinian statehood by UNESCO will be a boost to Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, who apparently has lost ground to his rival Hamas because Hamas secured the release of hundreds of Palestinian prisoners in exchange for the captured Israeli soldier a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, I think that this acceptance of Palestinian membership in UNESCO is definitely viewed as an important important symbolic move and seen as a win for Abbas as he pursues this strategy of going to the UN to gain an upgrade in status. The Palestinian people watched as Abbas turned his application over to Ban Ki-moon, in the Secretary General of the UN in September, and they applauded his action. There was some dissent in the Palestinian circles, but for the most part, there was a sense of pride that Abbas was taking what was seen as a defiant move and acting against this bilateral negotiation strategy, which has failed to deliver results to the Palestinian people. Then Abbas went home and was not able to deliver much on the ground, and instead Hamas was able to secure the release of prisoners. And so this vote in favor of membership will certainly reignite support and a sense of hope amongst the Palestinians that, in fact, this strategy may carry their struggle forward in some way or the other.
But, Leila Hillal, if the Palestinians were to get statehood, how they seem to be such a divided state. The Egyptians are trying to broker a deal to put it back together again, you know, like Humpty Dumpty. And clearly, it's not working. I mean, so how could you become a state if you're so divided?
Well, it is a major issue for the Palestinians to overcome. They have two territories on which they want to declare their state, the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. Those two pieces of territory are not linked geographically by land. They're separated by the State of Israel. And now they're divided in leadership and in politics, as Hamas and Fatah have been unable to reconcile. Abbas and leaders of Hamas have made it a point to enter into a reconciliation agreement, but that agreement has not moved forward. It is certainly something that undermines the Palestinian claim for statehood, because if it is divided, then one would ask the question, where, if they are a state, where are they exercising their power as a state, and how and who do they represent? It is Fatah that is taking its application to the UN agencies for membership. The Hamas has indicated support, but it's an ambivalent support, and certainly it doesn't go far enough to create a unified strategy that would overcome this issue of a divided Palestinian polity.
And Leila Hilal, on the Israeli side, of course, the acceptance of Palestine into UNESCO has been greeted with a fairly hostile response from the foreign minister, who's very hawkish, and the prime minister, of course, reiterated that they don't want to deal with Hamas, and they don't find this step at all helpful. But the problem that, as I see it, Leila Hilal, that the U.S. and the Israelis have is that they're saying that let's, you know, go back to the peace negotiations that have gone nowhere for 30 years. And you know, there's an old expression of Albert Einstein's, and if you keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome, that's the definition of insanity. So how... we all want this thing to go away because it sucks up so much geopolitical energy. It's been going on forever. Where is the breakthrough really going to happen? Do you think that this route of kind of shaming is going to work?
Well, I wish I had the magic answer. And I think certainly the strategy or the policy of bilateral negotiations have failed. But if you consider why, then perhaps you can see some kind of answer, although I'm not sure whether your listeners would consider it realistic. The primary blockage to achieving a resolution of the conflict has been the inability or unwillingness of the U.S. and other members of the international community to hold Israel accountable and to bring about an end of the occupation that began in 67. And if one were to address these issues of accountability, then it may be easier to level the playing field and to achieve that negotiated solution. That has been impossible to reach thus far because there has been no will to bring about the conditions that would allow for a change of the geopolitical situation in the region.
But the geopolitical situation in the region, Leila Hilal, has shifted in a kind of tectonic way with the Arab Spring and with the emergence of what is effectively a cold war between Saudi Arabia and Iran. And clearly things have changed because of that. Hamas has backed away from its sponsorship by Syria because of Syria is attacking the Palestinians within its own territory, not to mention killing thousands of its own people. And that's a part of what I would argue is a broader kind of cold war between the Saudis and the Iranians, who sponsor the Assad regime, and the Saudi king has made it pretty clear that he sponsors the rebellion inside of Syria. It's had its consequences with the Palestinians, at least with Hamas. So where do you think the external changes are going to affect what's going on there, notwithstanding, of course, that Israel many years ago rejected the Saudi peace offer, which I think a lot of sensible Israelis think was a mistake?
Right. Well, I think that one of the very important factors in the new Middle East has been the relationship or the decline of the relationship between Turkey and Israel and the shifting relationship between Egypt and Israel. The Israelis have had to withdraw their ambassador and their diplomatic corps from Egypt. Turkey has broken off relations with Israel. And I think Israel will find itself increasingly isolated in the new Middle East, in which public opinion matters, in which former dictators, you know, when they go away, you know, the new regimes will have to pay attention to public opinion, and public opinion supports Palestinian freedom and Palestinian rights. So I think there is a new dynamic afoot in the region which will not serve U.S. interest or Israeli interest ultimately, because the status quo will not, people will not look the other way when it comes to the status quo in the region. On Syria and that emerging conflict, geopolitical conflict, I don't see it as having particular relevance at this point in time, and specifically in regarding the UN bid that the Palestinians are undertaking, because that conflict has been a more isolated one, removed from the Palestinian question to date. Depending on how it plays out, of course, we could really see a very, very new Middle East.
Well, I think your point's well taken. That what directly affects the Palestinian situation far more is Egypt and Turkey. But that is a big part of the broader frame, I think, the Cold War between the Sunni Shia split, particularly with Iran and Saudi Arabia, and that could get hotter, surely.
Absolutely. I think you just had Bashar al-Assad making threats issued through a British newspaper saying that he could provoke 1,000 Afghanistans if there was U.S. intervention in the country. And people, commentators, are also saying that there's an emerging civil war in Syria. And so you do have the potential for a very divisive situation. How that will play out with the Palestinians remains to be seen. There are Palestinian refugees in Syria as well as most other Arab countries, but to date they have not been brought in to these domestic conflicts and upheavals. So the Palestinian question has been largely removed from the revolutions that are taking place in the region.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, Leila Hillel.
Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Leila Hillel, co-director of the New America Foundation Middle East Task Force. Previously, she served as a legal advisor to the Palestinian Negotiation Department, acted as an external advisor to the Palestinian negotiating team as part of the Annapolis Bilateral Peace Talks of 2008. She was a senior policy advisor to the Commissioner General of the UN Palestinian Agency and a visiting fellow and instructor at the Refugee Studies Center at Oxford University. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the 7th billionth person to arrive on planet Earth. السيارة وهويتك وين رايح من وين جاي شو قضيتك فقط حالك خلصت هيني جيتك تعيش بدون حواجز مش حتتحقق أمنيتك رصد السيارة وهويتك وين رايح من وين جاي شو قضيتك فكرت حالك خلصت هيني جيتك تعيش بدون حواجز مش حتتحقق أمنيتك انسرقنا من أرضنا بلدنا انغلبنا عحالين قلبنا اقنعونا وتدربنا نحمي إسرائيل من حالنا صرنا ممسوكين عساكر وين مكان بسولي كل هاد لمين وين 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 الملايين وين الملايين اللي بدنا تحرر فلسطين